Streaming live every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m. on Facebook Live and MichaelDukesShow.com.
And welcome back. It is your home for Common Sense Radio, the Michael Duke Show. We're getting ready to kick things off here. Hour one, our big guest for the day is Michael Hammond. He is the legislative counsel for Gun Owners of America. You could find them at gunowners.org. Gun Owners of America, of course, is really the big, the no-compromise gun lobby. As I was just talking about early on, this new bump stock ban has really shown the true colors of some of the, again, not the on-the-ground people, not the people who work at the state level and in the local communities, but of some of the national leadership of organizations like the NRA who basically have said, we're okay with new legislation if you're okay with it kind of thing. But Gun Owners of America has said, hey, what part of shall not be infringed do you not understand? And they are now getting ready to file a lawsuit when this thing hits the Federal Register. Michael Hammond, I'm sure, will be an integral part of that. He joins us now to discuss it. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. Good morning, Alaska.
Well, appreciate you coming in this morning, David. I'll be honest with you. I was watching this this unfold, and I kept hearing stirrings in the wind that this was going to be coming down, and I was hoping that, you know, I was hoping that it was being overblown and overstated, and then, you know, then the hammer dropped, and here we are. And, you know, a lot of people see this as, look, a bump stock is a novelty item. I agree. It is a novelty item. I don't own one. I really have no desire to own one. But at the same time, it is one more chip on our freedoms, on our liberties. It is one more chink in the chain. And especially heinous to me is the fact that these have been declared legal and now they're going to just arbitrarily and capriciously decide that they're not, make a taking with no compensation. Let's talk a little bit about this law and where you guys stand on it.
Yeah, can I make 3 points? And my 3 points are intended for those who say, why should I care about bump stock? Hopefully, by the time I make my 3 points, you'll realize how absolutely central this battle is to our battle for the Second Amendment. The first point I'd make is this, that a bump stock is being defined by BATF to be a machine gun. That is, a piece of plastic is defined as being a machine gun. Now, there are a whole bunch of reasons, some very obvious, some more subtle, which I can get into if you want me to, why a bump stock is not a machine gun. I mean, it's just a lie. It's just a fraud. It's the federal government using an artifice in order to achieve a policy objective it wants to achieve. Let me say this. If basically you could ban bump stocks by declaring it a machine gun, then you can ban cigarettes by defining them as sticks of dynamite. If the law doesn't make any difference anymore, if the statutory law becomes irrelevant, then at that point, we no longer live in a country with the rule of law. We live in a country in which the bureaucrats can do whatever they darn want. Right. The second point I'd make is this. No one has figured out how to define a bump stock without including a whole lot of other things in the process, certainly starting out with tripod sights, light triggers, things like that. But in this case, BATF has said the bump stock is a machine gun because it allows the AR-15 to be fired as a full automatic. Well, hold on a minute. If the AR-15 can be fired as a full automatic, it's a machine gun too.
Right.
And it's a machine gun a lot more obviously than the piece of plastic is. So do I think Trump is going to come and take your AR-15 tomorrow? No, I don't. But I do think that the next Democratic administration that comes along is going to use this reg to go after your AR-15 as well.
Right.
And for that matter, virtually every semi-automatic you have.
Right. And that's the biggest danger to me when I look at this and I see this, is that this is a very slippery slope. I mean, we're talking about the same ETF that at one point had designated a piece of string as a machine gun. When you start classifying things in this way, there's no stopping it. And again, completely at the bureaucratic level, at the administrative level, regulatory, no law, no vote by your representative in the legislative branch, no real public review, no way to kind of fight back against it. And again, taking something that you legally own and it's been qualified several times as being legally owned with no compensation, and if you refuse to do so, you are a felon. That's a tough deal.
Yeah, that's point three. I can come loop back to the string, as it were, if you want to. But that's point three. The takings clause of the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution says that takings of property for public use can be had only with just compensation. And the ATF has said, this thing that we've said for the last 15 years, it's legal for you to own, that we have encouraged you to own. Guess what? 99 days from now, you're going to be a felon if you don't destroy your $300 worth of property.
Right.
And you can throw it in a river, but then if BATF gets a hold of the bump stock company's records, you may have to prove to them what you did with it. So the only safe thing you can do in order to avoid being a felon is trundle down to your local BATF office and hand the thing in to them without any compensation whatsoever. And guess what? They will ask you to sign a form saying, I hereby waive all of my constitutional rights. Now, in Washington, D.C., maybe going down to your local BATF office is just driving 10 miles into town. So as people in Alaska know, it's sometimes not so easy in many parts of our country in order to do that. And so they are basically inviting Alaskans to turn themselves into felons under their definition, as a result of something they've encouraged Alaskans to do for the last 15 years.
Michael Hammond is our guest. He's the Legislative Council for Gun Owners of America, who are in the process of gathering and readying a lawsuit on the new bump stock ban that's been impaneled by President Trump. When it hits the Federal Register, again, we'll have 90 days if you have a bump stock to either destroy it or turn it in or both and prove so to the federal government. The problem with this whole thing, again, Michael, is that, this is supposedly we have a Republican administration, a Republican Congress and Senate, for the moment anyway. And yet we are now wandering into territory which gun owners were assured would never be walked by this president or this Congress. And yet here we are. I mean, with friends like this, as the saying goes, who needs enemies?
Yeah, I mean, we had Obama for 8 years. He wasn't a friend of the Second Amendment by any means, but we killed every single word of gun control which he proposed.
Right.
Now we have Trump, and what we have fixed next, basically a $625 million slush fund to encourage more and more names to be sent to the FBI's gun ban list, and that was passed on a must-pass bill. Now we have the bump stock regulation being promulgated by Trump, which does things that most anti-gun states wouldn't even imagine. California tried to say, oh, all of a sudden we're making magazines illegal and you have to turn them in. And guess what? That was overturned by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals as an unconstitutional taking.
Right.
Now how anti-gun do you have to be to trigger support from the or opposition from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Right. Yeah. We like to call the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals, and because
I've been corrected. I've been corrected in that respect twice on the last two radio programs I've done. So the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals.
Right.
And let me add one more thing. On the same day the bump stock regs were made public and finalized, the Trump Administration School Safety Commission came out with its recommendation that all the states pass gun confiscation orders, which
red
are
flag.
Called red flag laws.
Yep.
And what that is your angry ex or the police can go into a court. They can convene a secret court meeting that you don't know anything about, and you're certainly not allowed to attend. And in this secret court meeting, if they can demonstrate that you're dangerous, the judge will take away all of your or a bunch of your constitutional rights, your right to keep and bear arms, your Second Amendment rights, also your right to not have your house ransacked by the police when they arrive at your door at 3 a.m. in the morning, and also your right to due process under the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendments. So the secret court basically will strip you of all of your rights and all of your guns, and guess what? And we have lots of experience with ex parte orders in secret courts. And when the accuser is the only one in the room, then the judge will sign a ham sandwich.
Right.
So we have an order which a judge invariably is going to sign. The police arrive at your door in the middle of the night. They ransack your house. If you resist them, if you take the cold, dead hands theory of gun ownership, then they will either arrest you or they will kill you. And if you think this is a outrageous hypothetical, let me tell you this. Maryland has just enacted, quote, red flag gun confiscation laws. And already in Ferndale, Maryland, a 60-year-old man named Gary Willis, the police rang his doorbell at 5:17 in the morning, prepared to serve his red flag order. He came to the door, not surprisingly, with a gun in his hand. A scuffle ensued, and they shot him to death.
Right.
Now, it may be, as a matter of fact, that the only way you can be executed in America today is to be a gun owner subject to a gun confiscation order.
Yeah. And again, exercising these kind of warrants at, you know, at dark 30 in the morning in an attempt to disorient. We've had discussions about this on other topics regarding, you know, some of these warrants and things, but they're intentionally doing that. And it's amazing why people show up to a door at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning with a gun when you knock on the door, and then they claim, well, hey, he had a gun and we were there and, you know, he resisted, which is, you know, which again is a real problem. And it does, as you pointed out, just in the minds of a lot of people, maybe the judge, maybe the ex parte accuser, whatever, it just vindicates their position to say, see, he was crazy. No, you come up to my house at 3 or 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and knock on my door, ring my doorbell. I sure as hell am going to have some way to defend myself because I have no idea who you are at that hour in the morning. Everybody I know or love is inside my house. Why would I not be cautious when I go to the door like that? And this, again, goes back to President Trump's commentary right after the Parkland shooting, where he was exhorting the idea of red flag laws, saying we need to get these guns out of the hands of people and we'll worry about due process later. I have never seen so many conservatives try and spin that into something positive. Oh, it's 3D chess. It's 5D chess. He's three steps ahead of everybody. This is really part of his endgame scenario. That's all bullcrap. This is part of his authoritarian streak showing, and the fact that he really, I think, is more ambivalent about guns than anything else. He's listening to which way the wind is blowing, and he's acting. And this is a real problem. Michael Hammond is our guest, legislative counsel for GOA. Michael, we're coming up to the break. We got about a minute here. Your thoughts on that and on the actions of Trump and others who are saying that these kind of things are absolutely necessary to keep us all safe.
Well, first of all, no place I can think of can they demonstrate their red flag law or a gun confiscation order, as we call them, has had an impact. They had them in California during Thousand Oaks, didn't stop that. Had them in Connecticut during Newtown, didn't stop that. They say, well, we may have stopped the Parkland shooter. There were lots of red flags. Well, guess what? As a result of those, quote, red flags, they could have arrested him at any time. They could have charged him with a felony, which would have, under pre-existing law, have taken away his right to purchase a firearm.
Right.
Instead, they found the Parkland shooter, and I could use his name, but I won't, to be a low risk. If they found him to be a low risk, they're not going to go into a secret court and ask that a gun confiscation order be taken away from him. So basically, we all know it's just an effort by the gun control movement to put points on the board to create momentum toward the day in which civilians ultimately will be barred from owning any firearm.
Which, again, I think, even though they say it's not, and they continually try to repeat that, the truth is that is the ultimate goal. Michael Hammond is our guest, Legislative Counsel for Gun Owners of America. You can find him over at gunowners.org. Michael, hold on the line here a second. When we return, I want to talk specifically about what this lawsuit the GOA is working on seeks to do, the people who are involved, the arguments you guys are going to make. I'd like to get into some details and how people out here in the world, America, Alaska, across the country, can help with this. The Michael Duke Show continues right here on your home for Common Sense Radio. It is Firearms Friday, heard live around the world at MichaelDukeShow.com and across the state of Alaska on this, your favorite radio station.
What is that?
Common Sense. Regularly heard on American radio.
Michael Duke Show. Radio.
Okay, we are in the break. We are in the break right now. Michael Hammond is still our guest. He is with Gun Owners of America. We've had some good times. Michael and I, in fact, were on the air during the Kavanaugh hearings, which I thought was a fascinating discussion there with when Justice Kavanaugh was up. We've been watching
during the roll call vote.
Yeah, during the roll call vote, we were watching it as it went down. Pretty amazing stuff. Michael, you know, I want to talk, and I want to talk specifically about the lawsuit. But for a moment, let's focus for just a moment on the Republicans, the Republican Party, the president. You know, gun owners, I think, are becoming very, very kind of jaded about this whole thing, with where you have politicians who are supposedly on their team, who supposedly hold the same values that they do, freedom and liberty, gun rights, and et cetera, and yet we consistently and continuously see these same politicians compromise on things. And it's always the, you know, the left always comes in and said, give in to us. Otherwise, you're being unreasonable. You've got to do this one thing or this one more thing. Otherwise, you're being unreasonable. But nobody ever points to the fact that they're being unreasonable. And it always seems to be the right. The Republicans who are supposed to be protecting us are the ones that seem to cave on these issues.
Yeah, well, when Trump had his meeting with Dianne Feinstein, I mean, he was offering her total semi-automatic gun bans. He was, I presume, magazine bans as well. He's certainly pushing gun confiscation orders, and he's pushing universal background checks at the time. This is a guy who was elected only because of the Second Amendment community. Had the Second Amendment community not thrown everything it had in support of this guy, he wouldn't be president of the United States. So the guy owes his presidency to us, and he sat at this meeting and thought that he would get some credit from the left by offering the totality of Michael Bloomberg's gun control agenda. So what happened is I was interviewed that day by the Associated Press. And I said, well, the supposed best friend of the Second Amendment has now become the gun grabber in chief. Well, it turned out that Dana Perino quoted recorded me by name as saying that on the five. Trump apparently watched it, picked up the phone immediately, and within 48 hours, Chris Cox and Wayne LaPierre of NRA were having dinner with him in his frantic dinner of how to smooth things out off with the gun movement. So he's reachable, but apparently, you know, it's like a mule. I mean, you know, hit him over the head with a 2x4 in order to get him to comply with the commitments he made to us.
Right. Well, and again, that kind of highlights and reinforces what I said earlier, that I think that he's really personally probably ambivalent about gun rights. He really doesn't care one way or the other. He just wants, you know, as a populist, he just wants to appease whoever the loudest voices are at the time, until all of a sudden he gets skin in the game and he sees, you know, your quote or hears that and hears that he's the new gun grabber and realizing what a mistake he's made. That's the problem when you don't have a real principled stand on something like this. And that was my worry to begin with. I mean, you look back in his books and he's, you know, oh, I'm willing to do the 5-day waiting. I'm willing to ban assault weapons. Oh, but I've changed my mind now. I mean, this is a guy that does not have, when it comes to the Second Amendment, just does not have any standard bedrock principles at all.
Well, I've worked for a lot of politicians. I probably was on the payroll of more senators than just about anyone else in history as general counsel of the Senate Steering Committee. There are a lot of politicians that don't have any principles whatsoever. And basically, I think what I want in a politician anymore is that they're educable. If in fact we can force him to back up on these things. I think we're going to win the lawsuit. I realize we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. I think we're going to win the lawsuit. But these red flag laws, these gun confiscation orders, will be our central fight this year. I believe that we can successfully filibuster the universal background checks. Our central fight is going to be in about 30 states and in Congress, the effort to stop these knock in the middle of the night,
right,
Hitler-like, Third Reich gun confiscation procedures.
Definitely.
And so we're just going to have to hit him so hard that in the end, he's not an active advocate of the thing that is our central thing that we're battling this year.
Michael Hammett is our guest, Legislative Counsel for Gun Owners of America. Michael, hold the line here. We're about 12, 15 seconds out right now. We'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere. The Michael Duke Show, Common Sense, Liberty-Based, Free-Thinking Radio. Continuing now with Michael Hammond, who is the Legislative Counsel for Gun Owners of America. It really is one of the only no-compromise gun lobbies left in the United States. They don't get the press. They don't get all the splashiness that some of the bigger organizations get. They have a lot fewer members, but their name is feared in the halls of Congress because when something happens and they put out an alert at gunowners.org, things happen. Phone calls get made. And Michael Hammett has been a legislative counsel and legal counsel for senators and for many other politicians in the past. I'm sure he's heard the GOA name be used with reverence and with revulsion as well, I'm sure, when it comes down to
mostly revulsion, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's what happens. So let's talk a little bit about the details of this lawsuit, Michael. The lawsuit doesn't get put in place. The I don't know if it has not been published in the Federal Register as of last night. I don't know if they've done it this morning yet or not. I haven't seen. But the moment that this new regulation gets published in the Federal Register, you will have 90 days days as an owner of a bump stock to turn them in or become a felon or destroy it and prove your destruction of it and turn it in. What is the plan here from GOA and your affiliated partners in this lawsuit? And who are we representing? A person? Give us the full details of how this lawsuit's going to play out.
Well, we expect the regulation to be published in the Federal Register today, Friday, the 21st of December, and we will drop our lawsuit today. We will drop it in one of the three states of what's called the Sixth Circus, Michigan, Ohio, and Kentucky. And the reason why we're choosing that jurisdiction is because that circuit is almost entirely composed of conservative Republican judges who have a, at least at the circuit level, who have a history of concern over overreaching by the federal government. So we're representing at least a couple of individuals in that circuit who have bump stocks or who want to acquire bump stocks and who thus, as a result of that, have an interest in that. We're representing ourselves and I think at least one or two other gun organizations, which I'm not sure I'm at liberty to name at this point because we may still be in negotiations with them. So the suit will allege exactly what I said it would, that first of all, there's a statutory definition of what a machine gun is, and the statutory definition is a weapon which fires more than one round as a result of a single function of a trigger. And guess what? A bump stock may facilitate a semi-auto firing faster, but the trigger has to function every time a round is discharged from that gun. And as you pointed out earlier, you can bump fire with a string, you can bump fire with a rubber band, but actually the kinetic partner to the rifle, which allows you to bump fire, is not the bump stock itself. The kinetic partner is your arm. And right. So basically, if they want to declare that a machine gun, I don't know what the remedy would be, whether they cut off your arm or what. But that is that the forward pressure from your non-trigger finger arm is, in fact, what makes the gun bump fire. So the statute is irrespective of defines fully automatic fire as a single function of a trigger, as the statute does, or even the single pull of a trigger, bump fire does not fulfill that definition. Therefore, in order to try to declare that a bump stock is a machine gun, BATF just has to commit patent fraud. And so that's our first argument. And one would think that not only would gun owners understand that argument, but actually people who cared about the rule of law in this country, who didn't want the government to just start banning things by lying about them.
Right.
The second argument.
I was just going to say the basis of this, again, to some people that may seem like a small distinction when you're talking about the actual verbiage of the law, a single function of the trigger. But in the case of law, specifically, words matter. I mean, if you use shall versus may, if you use all these other things, I mean, that could turn a law completely on its head. And the fact that they are going to now just completely ignore what the very definition of machine gun is, it really makes it troubling. And again, leads us down that primrose path of potentially having all semi-automatics on the table, because hypothetically, you can bump fire almost any semi-automatic. And if it can simulate a machine gun because of bump fire, I mean, do they outlaw your finger? Do they outlaw your belt loop? Do they outlaw a rubber band or, as they have in the past, a string? It is a slippery slope for real.
It's a slippery slope that we've already slid down, because the promulgation by BATF says that the bump stock allows the AR-15 to become a full automatic. Now, the definition of machine gun is something which can be readily restored or converted to full automatic fire. So if the AR-15 becomes an automatic, it's not some future regulation we have to worry about. It's this regulation. This regulation outlaws AR-15s. Now, like I said, I don't expect the Trump administration to come to your door to take your AR-15 tomorrow. But the next time there's a Democratic administration, and there will be, then they will look at this reg and say, guess what? AR-15s are illegal. We don't have to do anything more. We just use Trump's own words to come to your door and take your guns.
It's a, you know, I'm very troubled by this, and I am concerned. Now, I expect, and you mentioned during the break that you expect that this lawsuit will actually go fairly well for gun rights advocates and gun owners, because again, I don't think it's well thought out, and I think that a legal challenge should be pretty simple on this. And now let's talk about the practicality of it. You win in the Sixth Circuit, okay. Great. What happens then? Do you get an injunction? Do you get to move on? Does this thing escalate all the way to the Supreme, or what happens at that point?
Well, incidentally, I spent all night, lucky for you, reading and editing our request for a preliminary injunction. And that's what we'll ask for. We'll ask for an injunction, which is takes place not at the end of the lawsuit, but at the beginning of the lawsuit, based on the probability that we're going to win it. So if we're successful today, then within the next few days, we may see a district court issue an injunction prohibiting the Trump administration from imposing this regulation, at least for the pendency of a lawsuit. Now, what happens if we win, as I expect we will, in the Sixth Circuit? Well, at that point, that may very well be it. The circuit courts consider tens of thousands of lawsuits each year. The Supreme Court only decides to look at about 70 of them. So only a microscopic percent of the decisions by the circuit courts are ever reviewed by the Supreme Court. But guess what? I almost wish it would, because now with the seating of Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, I think we now have a pro-gun majority on the Supreme Court. You may remember the Heller case. We had probably four pro-gun justices, four anti-gun justices, and then we had Anthony Kennedy, the squish. And it's now pretty clear, because the members of the Supreme Court who were in the back room have now said that what I've said all along was correct, and that is that Kennedy told Scalia, who wrote the opinion, that he wouldn't sign on to it unless Scalia included all sorts of language about don't intend to overturn current gun regs by states, banning guns for prohibited persons, and so on and so forth. But Kennedy's not there anymore. We may actually now have a Supreme Court which will unabashedly support the Second Amendment. So whether or not the Supreme Court agrees to hear it or not, I'm optimistic that in the end we're going to end up overturning this regulation.
We're down to less than a minute here, Michael. How could folks help out? How can regular Joes and gun owners out there, how can they help with this, and what do we need to do quickly?
You come onto our website at gunowners.org, and we should, I think we probably have extensive materials on how you can contribute to the lawsuit if you want, how you can keep abreast of that and other Second Amendment related issues.
This is good stuff. Michael Hammond, Legislative Counsel for Gun Owners of America. Michael, I appreciate all you're doing, and I especially appreciate the fact that you came on the program today like you said, you got a lot going on today. You got a lot of things happening, and you're pushing hard for it, and I appreciate it. I appreciate you taking the time to call this little tiny radio show to do this. Thank you so much for all
your questions. Alaska's a great big state. I mean, it's a great privilege for us to just imagine that huge vastness that we're broadcasting into.
You You bet. All right. Yeah. We'll hold the line just a second, Michael. Thank you so much. Folks, we got more coming up in Hour 2. David Kodria from the War on Guns will be joining us to talk about the ban and more. It is the Michael Duke Show, and it is Firearms Friday. Back with more right after this. All right. Michael, I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much. One final question. Somebody in the chat room just mentioned something that I hadn't even considered yet. And they said, since when can an agency override a statute?
That's the point. If I didn't say that explicitly, virtually everything that I said was intended to imply that.
Yeah.
That basically, you have them trying to override statutory law with regulations, and you just can't do that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Now, if I didn't say that explicitly, that's my fault.
No, and that's fine. I mean, it was implied, but I did want to make sure that it was explicit here. So I definitely appreciate you, sir. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to you and everybody there, to Larry and Eric and all the folks at Gun Owners. We appreciate all you guys do down there, okay?
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to you in Alaska.
You bet, you bet. We will talk to you in the new year. We'll try and touch base after the new year to see where this thing runs, all right?
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Michael.
Thanks so much, Michael. Appreciate it. Michael Hammond, Legislative Counsel for Gun Owners of America, right here on the big radio program. We thank him for being part of it today.